I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today, my guest is Dr. Diana Pavlek-Lyer, one of the foremost scholars on C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. Her scholarship and her teaching, as well as her work as an artist, all circle back to a common theme. It's that creativity thrives in community. Her landmark book, The Company They Keep, showed how the Inklings, a writing group that included C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, was collaborative in nature and not just a social group. And her most recent book, Bandersnatch, develops those ideas further and shows the practical side of how creative groups and writing groups can invigorate and enliven our work. Thank you so much, Diana, for coming on my show today.
Thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And so as far as your interest in Lewis and Tolkien and maybe some of the work of the other Inklings, does your fondness go all the way back to childhood?
I wish I could say that I discovered the magic of Narnia when I was still a kid, but that's not true. I discovered Tolkien when I was in high school. Mm. And this was back in the day when Tolkien was all the rage. And I was part of a group of friends who were just really into the whole Lord of the Rings thing. And so they ended up giving people names based on characters in the story. And so I would come to school and someone would say, yeah, Sam and Frodo and I went bowling on Wednesday, but we couldn't get a hold of Gandalf because he was busy. And I'd be thinking, what in the world? And so I first picked up Tolkien in self-defense so that I could figure out what people were talking about. And I just fell in love with the way that Tolkien creates an entire world. You know, I just felt like I was journeying with the characters, and I was hungry when they were hungry, and I was tired when they were tired. I'd never actually encountered an author who did such a good job of pulling me into a brand new realm the way Tolkien did. And so that was when I was in high school, and through Tolkien, I discovered C.S. Lewis and loved especially the Space Trilogy at that time. And so it was a great delight to me, still in high school, to discover that Lewis and Tolkien were friends. And so what I was curious about is if Lewis and Tolkien were friends, that meant they got together. And if they got together, that meant they must have had really rich conversations. So I was driven, even as a high school student, to answer two questions. First, what did Lewis and Tolkien talk about when they got together? And second, what did these conversations have to do with their own creative work? How did they influence each other? Because when you're meeting regularly with friends, whether it's over coffee or while you're at work or out for a walk or over a meal, those conversations become the spark of so much creative breakthrough. And whether that's dreaming up new ideas or really developing ideas that you have, or sometimes I think even the power of correcting some of our wrong turns in our creative journey. I was really curious how Lewis and Tolkien worked together in this process. So I thought that would be pretty easy to figure that out. I thought surely someone's written a book about it. And I looked and I read and I pondered and I searched. And I found that while some people had talked about their friendship sort of from the outside, no one had really given me the inside peek that I wanted to know exactly what they said, to be sort of a, I don't know, you might say like a fly on the wall when they met at the Eagle and Child pub or when they met in Lewis's rooms to critique their manuscripts. And since no one had written that book, I thought, well, maybe I'll give it a shot, you know. And so I was still in high school when I started researching and trying to answer these big questions. I guess I'd have to say, though, that even though I had big dreams, my talent wasn't equal to the task of really capturing the work of these authors. And so it took me more than 20 years to not only research these answers, but also find compelling ways to describe their important friendship.
So fascinating. It was a 20-year process. And what's even more fascinating is that I had heard that they... A couple things was that Tolkien, I was so surprised that Tolkien had helped Lewis come to a conversion to Christ and away from atheism. And when I had heard that, I was sort of astonished. I didn't know that was part of their friendship. And also that in the past, people had thought the Inklings was just kind of like, let's go get a beer and chat. And nobody had really delved in to see that this was a very give and take collaborative critique group too. And was that a surprise to you to, as you dug around, to find that this was actually a really kind of a serious group?
It was not surprising to me, but I know that it was surprising to a lot of people. And the reason, when you think about it, is actually kind of simple. And it has to do with how we think about literary influence. So a lot of times when we talk about influence, if one author influences another author, what we think is that they must be writing sort of the same kinds of things. And so people would look at Tolkien's books, and then they'd look at Lewis's books, and they would say, you know what, they're not very much alike. Mm. And so they must not have influenced each other. Mm-hmm. But influence doesn't only look at the product, the end result of our creative work. It also should consider the process. And so if you're looking at the influence of, say, Shakespeare on Tolkien, Tolkien and Shakespeare didn't sit down, they didn't walk together, they didn't have conversation. And so the nature of that influence would be more imitative, mm-hmm. because they didn't have that friendship and that ongoing interaction right in the thick of their creative process. But when you've got people who, from the very moment they think of an idea, hey, I've got an idea for a new book, or hey, I'm thinking about writing the screenplay, whatever it is, and right at that very point of inspiration, someone else comes along and starts asking questions, mm-hmm. and making suggestions, then you've got a different form of influence. You've got an influence that's process-based, mm-hmm. not product-based. And I think that that's where I was able to have some breakthroughs and some insight into their interaction, because I was looking not at the end product as much as what did the process look like, mm-hmm. and how did one comment or one question or one suggestion or one brutal contradiction right in the middle of the process shape the direction of a particular work. And so that's the kind of thing that I got really excited about. We've got lots of good detail, fortunately, about the conversations that Lewis and Tolkien had with one another. But we also have something that's rare and wonderful. We have a lot of their manuscripts. We have a lot of their multiple drafts. Hmm. And so a lot of my work has been looking at the primary documents. I would read their letters or read their diaries, and they would say, yes, we met last night, and we told Charles his work was too obscure and he needs to change it, or we told Lewis that he needs to cut down on this aspect of his description. Mm-hmm. And then I could look to see if that comment actually made a difference in the next version of the story that Lewis was working on or that Charles Williams was working on. So I looked at those very, very basic primary evidences. I guess that's kind of part of why it took so long, because when you're looking at primary documents like that, you have to kind of piece them together. It's kind of a Sherlock Holmesian kind of experience, mm-hmm. of looking for comments, looking for responses to those comments, and then studying the manuscripts for evidence of change. Mm.
And so what are some examples of direction that was taken to heart, maybe by Lewis or Tolkien, that actually shaped their work in some sort of significant way?
I can give you two examples. One example that we have is in the early drafts of The Lord of the Rings. C.S. Lewis made a specific comment that was really quite measurable. So I got excited when I found it. C.S. Lewis told Tolkien that there was too much dialogue and not enough action in his description of the story. Now, that was cool to see, because while that may not be the most significant thing, it's very, very clear in terms of simple counting. You figure out, was there more or was there less after this comment was made? And what we can find is that throughout the course of the work, as a result of this conversation, Tolkien cut out a lot of the dialogue. He really trimmed it down, and he really emphasized much more of the narrative than the conversation in the sections of the work that the Inklings looked at. So that's one example of a comment. We also know that the Inklings took Lewis to task for the tendency to repeat things, to put things in more than one way, to be a little bit redundant, as it were, in his writing. And you can see evidence of Lewis crossing out his restatements or his clarifications in some of his nonfiction, because the Inklings pointed out that he just needed to say it once and didn't need to repeat it over and over again.
that's really neat. And you can't really develop your points in isolation. I love that idea that, you know, we're better together than we are kind of creating alone. There's a quote I know from your book that I picked up along the way, and you write that it says more and more normal creativity starts to look a lot less like a lone genius stuck with a single breathtaking insight, and a whole lot more like a series of sparks coming from different directions, each spark inspiring something new. And that is a really salient point, that we think of these people as luminaries and there they were in their little desk and, you know, their office area, just kind of coming up with these genius ideas and these genius works of art and works of fiction, and that really they weren't. They were just kind of ordinary people with really great friends that were honest, and they took their criticisms and their critiques to heart, and they just kept slogging away like the rest of us.
I think that is just such an important point, Lisa, because a lot of times we buy into the Hollywood idea that there's a tortured artist sitting alone on a dark and stormy night with a typewriter in the attic and lightning flashing. And then there's all of a sudden this great breakthrough moment. And we think about that, whether it's with painters or musicians or authors, all of the little creative areas. And we think, if only I were smart enough or talented enough, if only I were really, really good at what I do, I would have those kinds of lightning flash moments. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, that the more you study the creative process of the people we think of as geniuses, the Mozarts and the Michelangelos, mm-hmm. and the Leonardo da Vinci's, the more you study the actual process for them, they look an awful lot like us, where you're sitting down at the Starbucks, as it were, mm-hmm. with a friend, and you're thinking, you know what, I've been playing with the idea of maybe writing a series of sonnets. And your friend says, really, what would that be about? And back and forth, you mm-hmm. sort of toss the ideas and refine what you're thinking in the process of explaining it to just another person. Mm. And then you go home and you fiddle with it a little bit. And then somebody else takes a look at it and they say, wow, I really like this part. And you're like, huh, this part's working. And so how can I amplify this? And maybe this part's not so good. And then day after day and week after week, through this ongoing dialogue of reading other people's stuff, having other people look at your stuff, having these lovely conversations about our creative work, about our ideas, about our inspirations, that the whole thing just emerges in this sort of lovely and highly interactive way. I argue in Company They Keep and also in Bandersnatch that that's normal. That's normal for geniuses. That's normal for highly productive artists throughout the centuries. And that what we think of as the Hollywood construct is actually very abnormal and unhealthy. And so that's not something to strive for. Mm. What we can strive for is just to get a little braver in sharing our process with one another. And when we do, we'll do better work. I'm convinced of it.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And now that you said Bandersnatch, that has reminded me that you promised to tell me and everyone how the name came about.
Yeah, I'm excited about this book, Bandersnatch, but Bandersnatch is not a book that I intended to write. And it is also a wonderful example of what happens when we're open to the possibility of collaboration. Mm. So I spent more than 20 years writing The Company They Keep, and it is, in fact, it's an academic book. And that doesn't mean that it's hard or it's obscure. It just means that there has to be a whole lot of really rich evidence for every claim that I make, because that's the nature of academic writing. You can't say something unless you really back it up with lots of evidence and footnotes and so on. And a lot of people love that, and a lot of people really appreciate that aspect of The Company They Keep. So I was using Company They Keep in a Inklings class that I was teaching. And after class, a student came up to me and said, you know, Dr. Glier, you wrote The Company They Keep as if you care about every last detail of these men's lives. And I said, yes, yes, I did. And she looked at me and she had kind of a quizzical look on her face and she said, you know, not everybody does. Well, there was an invitation for me to rethink some things, I guess. I could have been offended, I suppose, but that isn't where I went with that. I thought, what an interesting challenge. Would it be possible to take this book, which was written for a specific purpose and a specific audience, and write it for the kind of person who's like, yeah, I don't actually care about every last detail. And honestly, I'm maybe not so interested in the theory parts of it, but I really want to hear the stories of how these men work together. And I really want to know, does any of this have anything to do with me in my own creative work, whether that's just my side photography that I do for fun, or whether that's my blog, or whether that's something that I've always dreamed of doing, like writing a novel or a series of books. And so I kind of took up the challenge and I thought, what would that be like to take the best ideas and the very best examples from these authors and retell that in a way that's more streamlined and I guess more narrative in its nature. And then also to include lots of examples of how we can learn from what the Inklings did. And so in Bandersnatch, you have kind of the best of the creative collaboration of Lewis and Tolkien, but you also have these little boxed items called Doing What the Inklings Did, because I think that their stories are fascinating in and of themselves. But it gets very exciting when you start thinking, you know what, I could do a little bit more of what they did, and it could make a difference in the dreams that I have and the projects that I've always hoped to accomplish.
That's great. Well, what do you suggest for people? I know that there are some people who are just kind of fearful that their work stinks right now, and then they're afraid because it's their baby, and they don't want to get their baby ripped to shreds by someone who might be. And I one of the things I know someone had told me was to not, to show somebody their stuff, not to say, tell me everything that's bad about this, but tell me if this is clear, if it makes sense, if there's anything confusing about what I'm writing. And what would you say to somebody who's just afraid to show their first work because they feel sort of ashamed of it at first, or they feel like they're just not good enough yet, and they're afraid of critique and putting it out there for someone else to look at?
That's a great question. I'm going to answer that by pulling the camera back a little bit and inviting first a bigger sense of what collaboration includes. So a lot of times when we think about getting collaborators around us, we think about having people critique or point out the flaws or help us improve a draft of something that we've already done. And one of the things that I try to do in Bandersnatch and also in the speaking that I do is encourage people to think about how to involve others at every stage of the creative process. And so, as I said before, that may be as simple as sitting down with someone saying, I have an idea. Is this idea, does it have merit? Are there some things I should be considering if I'm thinking about pursuing it? So even before a word is written, to chat with somebody about our vision and to answer their good questions and help to clarify what it is that we're doing. Along the way, just to meet with people for accountability can be a great thing. I know a lot of writers who have simply started texting each other word counts on a daily basis. So they set up a goal to write 500 words a day is real common. And then at the end of each day, they simply text each other a number. Today I hit 400. Today I hit 200. Today I didn't write at all. Today I wrote 780 words. And simply having somebody who cares whether you wrote or not can often increase your productivity because you just know that there's somebody who notices what you're doing. It's hard to be a writer sometimes. It's hard to especially stay the course when you have a long-term ongoing project. And I just think about these people who simply say, is there anybody out there who cares whether I wrote or not today? And how can I just engage the energy that comes from having a kind of deadline? And that's not outside accountability where somebody's getting mad at you. It's where you set up your own goal and then you ask others to help you to just stay on the course that you've set for yourself. So the first thing in answer to your great question is we need to think more broadly about all of the steps of the creative process and where can we go and ask people not just for criticism, but for encouragement, for praise, for accountability, for support. Sometimes we just need to get together with someone and let someone hear our heart that we're in a hard place with the work that we're doing. I know two women that I know are great collaborators, and they don't live anywhere near each other, but they Skype once every 4 or 5 weeks simply to have a 1.5 hour session where they check in on each other. How are you doing? How's this last month been? What's been the hard stuff? What are you hoping for the next month? And they talk and they complain and they cry and they whine. And then after that conversation, they get up the next day and they just get back to work. And and both of them have told me it makes all the difference in the world that someone else cares what they're working on, and someone else understands that it gets hard sometimes. They do zero critique. They never read each other's stuff. All they do is talk with one another as companions in the process. So the first thing I would say is if people are timid, first of all, get a much bigger view of what collaboration can include. And then the second thing is when you are ready for that collaborative leap, when you're ready to have someone actually critique something that you did, I would suggest that they follow a couple of guidelines. First of all, it's helpful, I think, to understand what you're looking for in someone who gives good critique to you. And I always tell people there's one litmus test, and that's that a good critique should make you eager to go back and work on your project some more. So we think about, we need a good critique because we need someone who's an expert, or we need a good critique because we need somebody who's detailed. That's not the litmus test. The real test is, after you have interacted with this person, do you feel defeated? Do you feel deflated? Or is this the kind of person who gives you feedback that makes you restless to go and work on the project some more? That's a good critique. And the second thing is, anytime there's critique, I always encourage the person who's being critiqued to ask specifically for what it is that they need. So a lot of times when we submit something to critique for critique by another person, we know exactly where we are in terms of what we need at that point. So we think maybe there's too much description, or we think maybe things aren't clear, or we think maybe it's too long or too short or too formal or too informal. In other words, rather than handing over our little baby and saying, tell me everything, we should pick just one or two aspects that are at the exact point where we're working right now. So we might say, I'm afraid this drags. Do I need to pick up the pace, or is the pacing fine? So we ask specifically for what we need. And sometimes, again, what we need more than anything is a little bit of encouragement. So it's okay to say, I think I might have gotten off track, or I'm not sure that this is worth working on anymore. You know, it's interesting that C.S. Lewis, the great C.S. Lewis, would sometimes send poems to his friends with a note. And the question that he would ask is this worth working on some more? Do I have anything here that actually warrants more attention? Or am I on a dead end? Have I gotten off track? And you think if Lewis needed people to say, no, this might be worth working on, then maybe we could use that too. One of the examples that people may be aware of is that when C.S. Lewis wrote the first book in the Chronicles of Narnia, he'd written about 3 chapters of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And he got some negative feedback on it, and he'd actually sort of given up on it. But he had a friend named Roger Lancelin Green. And Roger Lancelin Green talked Lewis into reading the chapters out loud. And Lewis said, you know, I've been told that this isn't worth working on anymore. Is that, what do you think? And Green said, no, I think you're onto something here. I think this might actually turn into something rather interesting. I think you should keep at it. And Lewis was like, okay, if you say so, I'll give it another shot. And so literally, this friend, Roger Lancelin Green, saved Narnia from the garbage can. simply by telling Lewis not what to do, but that it was worth working on a little bit more. You know, we need people like that who say, you know what, I know you're tired. I know you're discouraged. Mm. I know this looks like a hot mess right now, but you got something here that's worth it. And you need to just press in and keep going. And I care whether or not you continue to do this scholarly paper, lecture, class that you're designing, painting that you're working on, sonnet series that you're writing, musical that you're writing, whatever the thing is, we need people in our world who say, I hear what you're doing, I see it, and I think it really matters, and I believe that you have what it takes to get there.
That is so true. When we do, we come into the world uniquely and we make art uniquely, but we can't make it alone. It's just so important. And I think that it's amazing to think, we don't think of it like that. We read the books and we're like, wow, that was amazing. I can't believe it. And we don't think that he could have just left it alone and we would have never have been invited to that world.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. Isn't that crazy?
I know it is, and we don't think about how huge our encouragements are to people. Not only that we need encouragement, but that we could be saving a world from going extinct or something.
There's another aspect of that, Lisa, that's really worth thinking about, and that's that if we could get just a little bit more courageous and sharing our messy creative process with each other. Think about what an encouragement it might be to look at somebody's messy process and go, oh my goodness, my process is messy too. Mm. To look at how incomplete our ideas can be, or to look at how much we struggle sometimes just to write one true sentence. Mm. And to know that we're not alone in the very complicated and unstructured process mm-hmm. of bringing forth creative work. If we can let each other in on the secret, that it's all messy and none of us feel up to the task mm-hmm. and all of us struggle and all of us face the long, dark night of the soul. And sometimes things take a lot longer than we think. And sometimes we just want to give up. If we let each other in on the process, I think that even just knowing that there are other people who are doing it in a similar way as our way of doing it.
Absolutely. This has been really brilliant. I appreciate your time and your work and your thoughts on the matter so much. I might have to have you back on because this feels like just whet my appetite. If people want to read your book or find out more about what you're doing or find you online, where's the best place they can reach you?
Well, thanks for that question. Bandersnatch and The Company They Keep are both available on Amazon. Bandersnatch is available in ebook and will be available in the fall as an audiobook, which I'm really excited about because so many of us creative people, we learn by listening. Mm. And I'm really excited about that possibility of having that book available to listen to anywhere. Mm. If you want to be in touch with me, I do tweet at Diana Glier, and I have a Facebook. Bandersnatch Book also has a Facebook page, and updates on Bandersnatch usually appear first on the Facebook page, and so that's a good thing to get in touch with. Bandersnatchbook.com is another place where people can be in touch for updates on that particular project, and particularly with the emphasis on the whole aspect of creativity, but for a broader view of who I am and the work that I'm doing and a copy of my speaking schedule. Mm. Those things are all at dianaglier.com.
Great. Thank you so much. And I hope maybe we could speak again sometime because I feel like we didn't get too much into Lewis and Tolkien, but there's just so much. You're just a deep well of information. So we barely scratched the surface, but this has been just such a delight and I'm very grateful.
Well, I would be really delighted to connect with you and to talk more about creativity and specifically the work of Lewis and Tolkien.
Yeah, and all those other Inklings. There were plenty more than I realized, too.
There are 19 men who met together twice a week for 17 years. Mm. And their mutual influence is absolutely remarkable. So there's lots to explore.
Thank you so much. Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.